Hi, everyone. This is Coach Fab coming to you today from our underground bunker in Western Pennsylvania on this July 9th, 2020 afternoon. Well, actually, our studio is in our basement, but I still call it an underground bunker to make it that much more exciting and mysterious. And as you are always expecting, our digital audience is back again. Hi, everybody. Small group today because I guess digital people are sort of recovering from the 4th of July celebrations. In any case, we're asking the question today, what's your preference, themed or unthemed casinos? Oh, a short break and we'll be right back to start our first segment, Winning and Losing. And we got a couple of stories there to share with you. All right, hang on. We'll be right back. Well, here at Casinos USA Podcast, we love to talk about winning and losing, and that's why we put this special segment into most of our podcast. And we're often honest about this, aren't we? There's a lot of luck when it comes to winning. Oh, yeah, a little skill sometimes, but a lot of luck. Well, there's a lot of luck when it comes to winning something twice. Mark Clark of South Rockwood, Michigan, is it our candidate for one of the luckiest gamblers of all time. So when so many of us, you know, we don't even get $20 when we spend $100 on scratch-off tickets, one Michigan man walked away with $4 million on a scratch-off ticket. But listen, not once, twice. You don't think you'd win $1 million once and you're, you know, never think about it happening twice? And that's what Mark Clark of, as I said, South Rockwood, Michigan, said after his latest win in the month of June. He says it's hard to put into words exactly what I am feeling. He's 50, and his good luck story began 3 years ago. At that time, he delivered fuel to a gas station in Hudson, Michigan. He's decided to go into the building and bought an instant game lottery ticket and scratched off the barcode. The ticket said... It was written. After he scratched it off, see the clerk. And so he did. And as we were talking, he goes on to say, he scratched off the rest of the ticket. And then the clerk looked at me with a shocked face and said, Mark, you just won $4 million. Oh, he took his truck back to his work, went to his parents' house to share the good news. And then shortly afterward, he retired. Well, anyway, last month, Clark was again in a gas station, and he bought another ticket. And as I said, he won another $4 million. In his words, I scratched a ticket off in the store with a coin my dad gave me about 10 years ago, he said. Oh, my goodness. And we lost our father about a year ago after some health struggles, and I can't help but think maybe that lucky coin helped me win this. So Mark says he'll continue... his quiet life, his old quiet life of retirement and fishing. And he says, my dad and I always used to fish together and have great memories of that. So this will help me keep fishing and enjoying time with my son and family. So I think you might agree with me in terms of winning and losing. Mark Clark of Michigan might be the luckiest gambler of all time. Well, how about it, kids? Would you like to hear another story about winning and losing? Yay! All right, everyone. Our next story comes out of Roanoke. That's in Virginia. That's associated with early American history and the story of the lost colony. Anyway, that's not what we're talking about it. A Roanoke woman, she wins $177,777 from a lottery scratch-off ticket, which really she earned because she got into an argument with her boyfriend. And they both decided to take a drive together so they could cool off. And they stopped for gas in Vinton, Virginia. Cheyenne asked her guy to go inside to buy her a drink and a scratch-off ticket, we call it. One of the tickets was a Lucky 7 Stripler game, She scratched it and then said, come look at this. We turned right around, Joshua told Virginia Lottery officials when the couple redeemed the winning ticket. It just doesn't seem real, Cheyenne added. The winning ticket was bought in Nishi Food Mart, which is located in 1551 East Washington Avenue in Vinton. Lucky Seven's Tripler is one of dozens of scratch-off games available from the Virginia Lottery. Hey, the odds of winning the top prize are only 1 in 1,040,000. Hey, but she did it. That's 177,777. And the best argument that people who are young and in love could have. Congratulations to both of you. And you have a lot to say about winning and losing.
Oh, and I almost forgot. I'm also going to need you to go ahead and come in on Sunday, too, okay? We lost some people this week, and we need to sort of play catch-up. Thanks.
I can just picture most of us telling our boss after we won a lottery scratch-off ticket, whether it was $4 million twice or $177,000, you know what, sir? I don't think I'll be coming in on Sunday, all right? I don't think I'll be coming in. Hey, we're going to go into our next segment of our podcast today, and we're going to go right to Craps, 3-2-1 Craps talk, that is, and we'll finish today's podcast with reminiscence about themed and unthemed casinos, like what's the advantage of one over the other? Is there any advantage? And, more or less just suggesting which do you prefer, an ordinary, nice, clean casino or one that's ordinary, clean, but extraordinary because it has a theme to it. Okay. All right. Let's talk about 3-2-1 Craps, and that is something about a strategy.
3-2-1
So 3-2-1 Craps is, considered by many the best slow roller crap system for those who play from the pass line. And it's been up on YouTube about a year, and it's had 176,000 views. But if you want to try something else, and I'm the kind of person that I try strategy after strategy. And right now I stick with that until I start to lose. And I haven't lost yet in this new strategy. So let's talk about another way to play craps other than 3-2-1 craps. And here it is. So it really starts by scouting a little bit. You know, if there's several craps tables for you to choose from, I look for the one where people look really angry, upset, disappointed, frustrated. And that's probably a cold table because most of the people playing probably play from the pass line or make field bets or make place bets. And a cold table is a cold table. There's not piles of chips there. You could see them kind of being upset. Or if you're playing at a good table from the pass line and all of a sudden the table turns cold and it seems like it's going to stay cold for a while, my suggestion is stop playing or change your strategy. So what are we doing right now that's been effective for us? Well, we're playing from the don't pass line, which means you're betting against the shooter. You're betting that she will establish her point, but she'll roll a 7 before she rolls that point. And that's called sevening out. When you seven out, you lose the bets on the pass line and the odds behind it. And you lose the field bets or the place bets that you've made. Of course, the field bets are one roll bets, but your place bets stayed up until she sevened out. Well, she sevened out, and now you lost. And now you lost your pass line bet and the odds behind it. And if you were playing the Fremont Street Grind, also called the Iron Cross, the 5-6-8 you place and you put something in the field, you lost it all. You lost it all. So what are we talking about? Well, because the pass line player, the shooter, and all others who bet on the pass line and also had place bets out there lost, the one player or two who was playing the don't pass line, they just won. Even money. And so I had $25 on the don't pass line, and I won $25. But more than that, in this system, there's some other things that we consider. So let's go back to our shooter establishing her point. Let's say it's a 5. Well, I will place then the 6 and the 8 for $18 each. That's $36. And I'm hoping for one hit. If one hit on either one of them occurs, I win $21. And then I say, take my place bets off. And they put a button on one of them, which means they're both off. All right, so if someone sevens out, I don't lose that money, you know, because the bets were off. And I've won $21. But in the interim, before it's decided if she's going to make her a point or she's going to seven out, I now have a $25 bet on the don't pass line that I'm only risking $4 because I've already won $21. So, you know what? If she makes her point, it's not that bad for me. I lost $4. But because the don't pass line has a slight advantage, more often than not, I'm going to win $25 and add that to the $21 I already won. And you could see, I didn't do too badly. I didn't do too badly. Don't get upset with me. All right. I wanted you to make a 6 or an 8, you know, no matter what your point was. All right. Now, if the point that she established was a 6, I would still bet the 8. And if the point was the 8, I'd still bet the 6, you know. And what I would compensate here, I have $18 at risk. If the point was 6, I'd put $5 on a hard 6. If the point was 8, I'd put $5 on a hard 8. So if she did roll one and it was a hard 8 winner or a hard 6 winner, I would cover my don't pass losses and still make a little bit of money. So this is a hybrid system, you know, where I'm making place bets on a 6 and 8, but I'm coming from the don't pass line. And I want to make this, confession. I have the advantage once the point's established. However, it's the come out roll that I have to sweat. Because if she rolls a 7 or an 11 on the come out roll and I have $25 on the don't pass, it's good night. I just got wiped out. I lost $25. But if she rolls a 2 or a 3, I won $25 and she lost on the come out roll. And a new game starts. And if she rolls a 12, I don't lose anything. It's just a push for me. But she loses, of course, and a new game starts. Now, if it gets to be a frequent thing where she's throwing sevens on the come out, whoa, I'm going to wait till she stops shooting, or I'm going to hop the sevens for $6 now. What does that do? That pays $26. So if she rolls a 7, I win a buck. Lose the 25 on the don't pass. Now, I know what you're thinking. I already got $6 invested, but okay. So now, in essence, I have a $19 bet on the don't pass line because I lost $6, you know, and she didn't roll a 7. She established her point. Let's say it was an 8. Well, I'm still placing that 6 for 18 and putting $5 on the hard 8. So I'm still doing all right. And if that $18 place bet hits, that's $21. So if she sevens out, I'll win $21 plus the $19, you know, real money I have on the don't pass line, and I'll lose the $5 hard way bet that I made. But ladies and gentlemen, I'm still ahead. You know, this started a conversation one night. We were playing, it was about 8:30, and someone said, if you had to play till midnight, what would you do? And I would say, well, I'll tell you right now what I'd do. I'd go to the don'ts. And I'm not playing odds on the don'ts, and I don't want to discuss that with you here because there are many times in other strategies I do play odds on the don't. But I'm not playing odds. I'm just playing that $25. And again, sometimes I'll hedge the come out roll with the hop the reds. That's the sevens. And that pays 15 to 1, so $2 on each one. A 7 pays $26. And that's the hedge. But I don't do that all the time. Normally, I just go $25 and hope that the shooter establishes a point. And then I place the 6 and 8 and hope I get one hit. Then I go off. And then I'm in good shape because if that shooter goes on to make the point, I won $21 and I lose 25, so it's only a $4 loss. And that's why I can play till midnight. All right. Haven't really named a strategy yet, but, you know, in essence, it's placing the 6 and 8 from the don't pass line. Placing the 6 and 8 from the don't pass line. All right, our final segment today is a discussion with my partner, Janio, talking about the appeal of theme casinos as opposed to just ordinary, nondescript, ordinary, dark, but cold casinos that don't really have any interesting theme to be concerned about. And I wanted to talk about something to make it dramatic. We'll mention all the ones in Las Vegas that we have played at and stayed at. But we had that one trip to Reno last year to visit our granddaughter who's at UNR, University of Nevada, Reno. And we stayed in the Silver Legacy. And this theme in this casino, it's called the Row. There's three casinos sort of in one building. But the Silver Legacy is the middle one, and it's this giant machine. And when I say giant, think of like King Kong, you know, bigger than King Kong. And it's a replica with some of the original parts of a mining machine that was so advanced for its day that the iron ore would go in at the top, and what would come out at the bottom were silver nuggets. So it kind of recreates that experience, and you watch it. They have a lot of transparent parts in it, and that's really the reason why Nevada is called the Silver State, is because it was the mother lode for silver in the United States. Yeah, and the Reno Casino is called the Row, and the Silver Legacy is really the legacy of the state of Nevada. And Janie wants to talk a little bit about the Silver Legacy, and also some of the other theme casinos on the Las Vegas Strip that she has enjoyed. So we'll be right back after a short break. So I don't know how you felt about it, but when I first saw that mining machine at the Silver Legacy, it looked to me like they had this giant machine and they built the whole building around it.
Well, I think they did. It's been there for quite a while. What I liked about that particular, not just that casino, but the collection of the three of them together is, you know, you can walk from one to the other without going outside. If you're staying there and you have children or even teenagers, Circus Circus there has quite a large area. And they have the little acts, the comedians, the magicians, just like the Circus Circus in Las Vegas has. And so it's quite an experience. You can go from, you know, in all three of them. The only thing I have to say I was disappointed in, they don't have a lot of shops. They have restaurants. They have, the Starbucks in the one, but they don't have, they just have one gift shop, I think, in each one of them where you can buy souvenirs of that particular casino, their t-shirts.
Well, the other one, the Silver Legacy, the Circus Circus, but the other one is the Eldorado.
Right. I always forget that one. but I like that. I like it because you can just go through them all together, and not that it's, you know, the weather's bad or anything, but they do have snowstorms and such there, and you might not want to go out then, or if it's too hot in the summers there, you know, just being in the one building's kind of nice.
Well, to get back to the Strip and the themes that we know there, you know, generally speaking, the best casino is the one where you win. But, you know, gambling aside, we all agree, you don't gamble constantly when you're at a casino resort. I mean, there's things like restaurants, pools, shows, and all that. But also a lot of people get pleasure out of if the casino is themed. And let's just talk a little bit about themes. Where would you want to start with that?
Well, I would say that the theme started when Las Vegas Strip started, because the Frontier was the first casino in the whole country that had a theme, and that was the Wild West theme. And when we stayed there in 1980, I loved it. I fell in love with the fact that it was themed. They called the bars the saloons. All their employees wore Western attire. They had shows that themed the Wild West and country.
It was so empty behind it. There used to have be a horse. You could ride horses there.
Well, they used to.
It's hard to believe today.
They told us it was called that because there was a hitching post out back, and you could ride up to it. And when we went in 1980, it was a lot of desert behind there. It wasn't developed at all the way it is now.
Yeah, I think it was industrial boulevards there now, and, you know.
Oh, and yes, it's amazing how it's changed.
You know, the other one from the time period, maybe even into the 90s, was the Rio, the theme at the Rio. That was one of your favorites.
That was my favorite for a long time. That was a Mardi Gras theme, and they had a Mardi Gras parade in the sky, on the ceiling every night. They would throw Mardi Gras beads to, you know, everybody standing by watching this parade of lights. It had several different names, but it was fun to watch. They had actually two different casinos. The one part was called Mardi Gras Village, and that's where they had a separate type casino, lots of shops, lots of restaurants. The Voodoo Lounge was on the top. We ate there several times with great outdoor views and decks outside.
Yeah, I believe the Voodoo Lounge is still there, but the Sky Show has gone.
Well, yeah, that all went. They even took away the Mardi Gras Village.
Well, another one on the Strip that I think was made famous by, you know, the movies, Caesar's Palace.
Well, yeah, that one has been so large, too. That casino is so large, I don't think I've even ever been all through it. But it had a lot of neat features in it. And, of course, I always liked the indoor mall.
Parts of it, you could imagine yourself back in ancient Rome, you know, with all the statuary.
Right. They had, all the statuary. And they had little kinds of shows that projected onto the statues, made them look like they came alive.
Yeah.
They had a great two-story mall in there, though. Village, I can't remember what the Coliseum Shops they called it.
Well, the one that I have sort of a warm feeling for, I never really stayed there though, is New York, New York. Not just because of the Statue of Liberty, but.
Well, we liked that because of the delis. They had the delis, and that casino floor was built more like streets of New York with the delis there.
I loved the delis. I did, I have to admit.
Yeah, that and the roller coaster on the outside there. Yeah, we never stayed there, but we've stayed at all hotels all around them.
Yeah, well, Excalibur definitely is themed. They call it the castle, and I know it's starting to fade and get older now, but certainly was themed.
Yeah, and we took our grandchildren there, and of course we went to the tournament of
Kings.
Tournament of Kings with the horses, and I tell you that was a great experience. They loved it. They have an arcade there. They still have that Tournament of Kings show. They have an arcade in the basement, you know, with all I don't know hundreds of games. There's a sort of a Dairy Queen. I think it's an actual franchise Dairy Queen.
The issue for everybody now, though, is the rooms are just getting so old, they're not pumping any money into remodeling.
Right, yeah, no, they haven't been. So that's questionable, the status. And what happened was Las Vegas, as it was growing, decided to try to attract more families. They wanted people to come and bring their children. And so that started all these themed casinos, and especially ones with children in mind, and that would be Excalibur, that would be Circus, that the MGM Grand even tried in the beginning for that. They had an amusement park.
Yeah, they had it was short-lived, though,
it
right?
It was very short-lived, maybe a year or two. That's one we never got to see, where we liked Circus because they had, you could see circus acts every half hour, you know, you sat in the, just like you were at a circus, and they had magicians, acrobats.
Well, I think Circus still does that.
They do. Well, another feature of Circus, they have the amusement park under the dome. You know, it's all air conditioned in there, and it's still operational. So that's definitely still an attraction there. Again, if you have children.
I want to jump to I guess you wouldn't consider it necessarily a theme, but it's a major attraction, and that's the Stratosphere, which is, of course, now called the Strat, the rides on top.
Oh, the international.
Yeah, speaking about amusement parks,
right,
that still brings thousands of people to the Strat. Yeah.
Right. Every time we've gone, and every time I have a different grandchild around or there, I've taken them all there. They get to see the rides. And I've always met guests from other countries. You know, it's an international attraction for people that like those kind of rides.
Well, up the street a little bit, they've given up on their theme. They took down their show, which I always enjoyed, and that's Treasure Island. You know, TI, they call it now.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
kind of just,
when it
the
opened,
theme's disappearing. Yeah.
They had two battleships out front.
No, they weren't battleships. They were
pirate ships. Well, pirate ships, rather. Okay, pirate ships. And then one would sink.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then they'd bring them back up. And that was a major attraction because you could watch it from the street. The street was all filled up and lined up. But they took that out.
If you look at the carpet,
the carpet still is the Buccaneer type, has the Buccaneer print on it. There's still some remnants of Treasure Island there, but it's fading fast.
On the southern end of the strip, going all the way down in the Tropicana, all they had, of course, was that stained glass window in years gone by. But recently, the remodeling is sort of themed with southern Florida, South Florida, Cuban-like colors throughout. I think it's a lot brighter and better now.
Yes, their rooms even exhibit that. They have a lot of rattan and wicker furniture and bedspreads with the palms and such. It does follow that theme pretty well, but what they did in the casino downstairs really makes it look better,
yeah,
I think.
It's brighter,
right,
cleaner.
It is, yeah.
Well, coming up the street, you know what you're going to talk about.
Well, the probably one of the most popular or famous for a theme is the Luxor, which is the pyramid. People like that. It didn't make for such good rooms, though, because of the angle, because of the elevators going at, you know, angles. People didn't like that, and their new towers are so much nicer.
Yeah,
the rooms are nicer.
I would suggest to all our listeners, if you're going to stay at the Luxor, or Luxor, it's your choice, but stay in a tower, because they're remodeled. The rooms in a pyramid, they have a lot to be desired.
Yeah, they do. Even the suites. We've never stayed in even a regular room. We had a large two-room suite, but they leave a lot to be desired, and the towers are so nice.
Well, we stayed in a tower suite, and it was unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. That was like a three-room deal. Yeah. That was very nice. And the inside of the pyramid, you know, it's just awkward anymore. It used to be they actually had some sarcophagus that you could tour, a little, you know, really followed the Egyptian theme, and then 9/11 happened, and that became very unpopular,
yeah,
as did
the old Sahara.
No, not so much the Sahara as the Aladdin.
The Aladdin.
The Aladdin had the theme that became Planet Hollywood. So those themes change, but the Luxor's still there, and it has that infamous light that you can see up in space.
They don't even run it all the time now. They're trying to save some money with it. It was one of the most powerful beams in the world, I understand.
It is, uh-huh. And I've always liked the Luxor, though. They've always been very good to us, and their popularity now is that they're attracting younger people now with the esports arena and auditorium and gaming that they have set up in there.
I think that's going to continue to grow. But, you know, the time's not on our side anymore. It's definitely on the millennial side. So let's talk a little bit about the Cosmopolitan.
Right. Well, the Cosmopolitan, I think, is themed for younger, for the millennials.
I don't think they'd even call it a theme.
No, they probably wouldn't. It's sort of opulent, I think.
High-end.
With that very beautiful and amazing chandelier they have at the Chandelier Bar.
I sort of created my own theme in my imagination at the Chandelier Bar. I always thought I was like in Tsar Nicholas's Winter Palace before the Russian Revolution with that giant chandelier. But they do have some special features at the Cosmopolitan that are attractive to one of any age. And one of them to me is that the rooms are suites and they have balconies.
Right.
Gorgeous.
I think we maybe talked about this before. That was originally built to be condos and apartments, and only 11 of them sold as this is what the staff has told us, 11 of them have permanent residents that bought the units. So then they turned them, it turned into just a hotel. And so they are very, they're nice suites. They have balconies. And that place, as everybody knows, is so large, you know, with the pools and then the one they cover in the winter and have ice skating on it. And the marsh, you make s'mores up there over the fire pits.
And of course, their famous secret pizza.
Right. That's a much more younger designed hotel. But to go back to the Strip, there's still themed Paris. Paris with the Eiffel Tower.
Now that's old fashioned theme there. Go ahead with that one.
Well, they have lit up the Eiffel Tower with a special lighting project over the last year. In fact, they opened it when we were there last year. And people still like to go to the restaurant on the top, and they like to do their buffets. I don't think they're having the buffets now, but that was always very popular.
One of our frequent callers from Colorado, and he's a big-time gambler, goes to Paris. He likes to stay there. His wife loves it there as well, and he gambles there. So it's not like it's a place that's fading. I mean, it's still attractive and brings people in because of the theme.
Oh, it is. And the other thing is it's connected to Bally's. So there again, you can walk right through their walkway and beautiful shops. I love the shops there. Beautiful shops, lots of eateries, and you have two casinos right there without having to leave the building.
Well, would you agree with me? Bally's has no theme. It's themeless.
Probably not. What's nice, though, about Bally's, you're right across the street from the Bellagio, and we had a room one time that looked out on the Strip. You could watch the water shows. Now, the Bellagio attraction is the water shows and what's supposed to be like Lake Como in Italy.
Yeah, and the conservatory.
And their conservatory, yes. That's all worth seeing. That's all worth, and it's all free. I mean, good attractions.
Now, I've gambled at the Venetian and the Palazzo, and I would call them themed. We haven't stayed there, but I heard they're beautiful. The rooms are beautiful.
Right. They have those shops too, and they had the gondola rides. I don't even know if they still have those, but yeah, it was patterned to be an Italian theme. Also, I might say, and it might be a small theme, but the Flamingo. The Flamingo has the gardens out back, and they're back. I call it out back, but they have the gardens with the real flamingos in them. That's the Bugsy Siegel Casino.
Yeah, and that's historic.
Yeah, and they also, which still has the low ceilings because they're original, and it even has the Jimmy Buffett Margaritaville too now.
I'm going to say on the Strip it's about 50-50, themed and unthemed. You want to jump to Fremont Street?
Well, okay. Fremont Street has definitely some attractions there. The Golden Nugget, they have the series of Gold Nuggets in their lobby. They now have the shark pool. You can, you know, go through the slide that goes through the pool of the...
Yeah, that's impressive.
The tank
yeah.
That has the sharks in it. And downtown, when they decided to contain everything as like one experience, instead of having each hotel and casino, because they were much older and would have needed a lot of work and were much smaller, they built that large canopy... And they lighted
it.
Yeah,
that's super high-tech now.
Well, that's very high-tech. And they have it, and they called it the Fremont Street Experience. That was their way of surviving. So if you went there, that was a big attraction that they would start in the evening.
And that huge stage they have on the outside.
Well,
that's so popular
stages,
with the millennials
right.
and actually the Gen Xers.
Well, us, the boomers, yeah, and they the boomers. Have old groups too.
Yeah, they do. And I have to tell you, I think the whole thing is themed by the Fremont Street Experience. But the casinos, for the most part, have kept their originality. Like, whatever
right,
they have been doing
right.
for years, they've sort of maintained that.
Right, and they're a lot of older ones, but they're like Binion's. They're just fun to go into and see how they were. The Four Queens is popular.
Now, that might change completely with the Circa that's coming there. And, you know, Derek Stevens owns the D. You know, he's going the other way. So who knows what time holds, but I still think it's up in the air, 50-50, you know, with theme or unthemed. I don't want every casino to look the same, be painted the same way, have the same carpeting.
Oh, but let's face it. There are people that walk into casinos and don't pay any attention to the carpet or the scenery. Yeah. You know, they don't care. They're just there. They want to play slots. They want to play table games. You know, it's hard to avoid looking at all of that.
I know. It's still fun to go casino hopping just to look, you know, at any age. But there's two I have to mention. I don't think there's a particular theme. It's just beautifully designed, and that's the Wynn and the Encore.
Oh, right, yes. Now, we have stayed at the Encore several times. We haven't stayed in the Wynn, but because they're connected, we go over there a lot. And what an attraction their man-made lake is. I mean, you have to see that.
You know, again, there's people that are attracted to the gambling at certain places. They, like, for example, in Fremont, they want lower-limit table games, or they might want 100-time odds, you know, on the Strip. Or they might want to go to Ellis Island right off the Strip.
Oh, yeah, we didn't mention Ellis Island. Now, Ellis Island, we feel that's the best food deals in almost all of Las Vegas.
Well, I always wonder, too, about how much the younger ones know about history. They don't even know what Ellis Island is. What the hell is Ellis Island?
Yeah,
it's not an island in the tropics. You know?
Right, yeah. And that theme isn't followed very much there, actually.
Just on a sign, that's all. The signage is about it. But
I have to mention a few other things. We didn't talk about the Mirage on the Strip.
That
has the working volcano.
Yeah, that's
that
so
went
big,
in
yeah.
at the same time all these others went in.
And, of course, the famous show that's no longer
The Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah.
But their secret gardens are still there, where they have dolphins and some other. They have the white. Their animals stay there. They don't have the show anymore, but. So the Mirage, and they have a large aquarium behind the desk in the lobby that's worth seeing.
Well, there's still places for us to explore, particularly out near Henderson, and there's new casinos that, you know, relatively new, a decade or so. So, and downtown is bringing some new ones.
And
Resorts World's coming next year. So there's still things.
The M is in Henderson, and that's right in the thick of the Raider country now.
Right, so that's going to be.
Stadium is right there.
So there's a lot of things about it, but when I think of our local casinos here in Western Pennsylvania, the Meadows has sort of a horse racing theme to it.
Well, because they have
a track, yeah. And the rivers downtown, do you see any theme there? I don't.
No, it's just called the Rivers, which is good because of the three rivers in Pittsburgh. It's just following a city theme as far as the rivers being there. Now, I would have to say, though, among casinos, their food in all their restaurants is probably on the top of the list, other than the where you go to Las Vegas and you're in the restaurants that have the top chefs owning them and preparing food there.
So let me close this segment and the podcast. If you do want to comment on a theme or unthemed casino you feel is very attractive, we have MGM National Harbor comes to mind, relatively new. It's supposed to be unbelievable, and of course, I thought it was. Answering service is our 24/7 voicemail, 1-724-519-4556. That's 1-724-519-4556. Just feel welcome to give us your thoughts on a casino that you think is just absolutely stunning, whether it's themed or not. And I think that's, again, part of the enjoyment of traveling to these casino resorts. It's just appreciating that look, you know, what they have. So we hope you enjoyed our kind of off-the-cuff discussion on themed and unthemed casinos. And everybody has their own sense of taste, so obviously nobody has to agree, and we can all respect each other's views. Casinos USA podcast is still that special place that pursues life, liberty, and happiness. And, of course, we have a little magic because every day here is Saturday. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in our late July podcast in a couple weeks. Stay safe, and let's hope we meet up at a casino rather soon. So long.